We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone is gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk, and some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we love to try them on. Some of you may know that. Billy Joel wrote it in 1977. That was way before the internet as we know it was even a digital twinkle in most of our eyes. But the more things change, the more some things stay the same. The internet is with us whether we want it to be or not, and whether we are personally on the net or not. It's not always about you, because you may have to deal in your life with everyone else who is on the net where these behaviors are true for them and impact their interactions with you. So whether you're there or you're not there, this matters to you because it impacts your life. All of us wear masks as we move through the world. For some of us, these masks are harmless and almost completely see-through. Think about those children's masks where it's a totally clear plastic with just some eyebrows and some lips. These masks are layers of politeness and etiquette and culture. They let us pretend we're grown up. We use them to cover those moments of selfishness or emotions or feelings that our culture says are a bad idea to show. They're silk and gauze. They're the veil of maturity, adulthood. They're what keep you from screaming, woohoo, when you get the promotion and the guy next to you who's worked equally hard doesn't. They're what keep you from gagging when somebody serves you something, maybe at a dinner you're attending that you really don't like, where a three-year-old would go, ew. Your mask lets you say, oh no, I'm on a diet. They don't cover who you are, these masks, but they keep you from showing the full extent of your feelings. They hide involuntary reactions that we've learned can hurt people or aren't always helpful. But you can see us under these masks, these lightest masks. Call them politeness, if you will. Without them, social interaction would be harder, but still possible. Other masks we wear are a little thicker. You can imagine these as whole face coverings of rubber and plastic, like the expensive masks you see online with the dinosaur head. And we use them when parts of our personality or our beliefs can't be shown in a context. And it may be completely harmless. So think of every time you've gone to an expensive restaurant and the waitress says, I am Jill, and I'll be your waitress today. How can I help you? And she's got a big smile. And she's been on her feet for 9.5 hours, and her back hurts. She doesn't like you that much. I'm giving you a hint. She really wants a good tip. Or what about when you're on TV and you're watching what is WWF, and the masked wrestler gets up there and he rips the mask off and he's snarling and his face is contorted. Hatred. He doesn't really hate anybody. He's looking for a paycheck. Mask. A character. These kind of masks don't control the extent of an emotion shown. They cover it completely. They can create the impression that we think or we feel something we do not. Perfectly appropriate in all kinds of contexts, and all of us have worn them at times. For those of you who worked as therapists or doctors or nurses, there have been times where you heard something that made you inwardly go, oh dear God, I think I'm going to be ill. Teachers have heard the same thing. The first time a first grader picks up a frog on the playground and stuffs it in their mouth to impress the girls, you don't tell them, oh my God! The mask comes down and you say, that wasn't very appropriate, Billy. Spit out the frog. I was a nurse for 22 years. There were enough times when I worked ER that I kept a very straight face and said, oh no, we see this all the time. No, we don't. You're the only one that's ever done this. But the mask preserves the dignity. It's a kindness at times. Other times it preserves my dignity or your dignity. Not all pieces of who you are appropriate in every context. Not all emotional reactions are helpful, and not all interests need to be visible everywhere you go. But you can still wear these masks and be your real self. The trick is you take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on. And you don't wear them for the bulk of your life. These can keep us from being hurt unnecessarily and help us avoid violent confrontation at times. But they can also mislead and confuse. How many of you know someone, or were someone, who mistook a bartender's friendliness for flirting? How many of you ever have had a friend who was furious because that waitress was flirting with my partner all night? How many of you ever said, wow, that doctor is incredibly cold. He doesn't care about me at all. Like he had a mask on. Wearing a mask requires a little skill to do well. The third type of masks are the masks that hide reality completely. These are rock walls, steel sheets that you're hiding behind. They're layers of impenetrable substance. People use them to mislead and misdirect and misinform. This is the face worn by the woman who claims she adores sports as she dates the wealthy sports fan until they get married. And she says, actually, you know, I really want you to sell those season tickets. This is the face of the good Christian who wears clan robes on Sunday after church. This is the face of the male feminist who is all about that life until he sleeps with you and then you never see him again. This is the face of the serial killer who pretends to be the harmless tourist. In the world of flesh and blood interaction, we have a huge number of tools at our disposal that let us see through these masks. Body language and tone give people away. If we know someone in person, we can look beyond the immediate interaction and look at their life. Does it match? In general, unless someone is making a concentrated effort continuously to be someone they're not, a con person, we get some understanding of what the face looks like. Who's the real person? And when we're wearing the mask, we know that. We know that. We know you can see us underneath, or at least you'll be able to if we keep it up. In general, we use our masks in good ways to present our best face to the world, or to do a specific task at work with the right tone. But we know that the people around us are real, and you're going to interact or not interact based on who you're being shown that we are. And they'll figure out eventually if they don't match. So in the physical world, you have choices about what you show, but they are limited by reality. Now, I can come out here and I can say to you, behold, I am 6 foot tall, blonde, and I wear a size 3. You know, it's not going to fly for very long unless I am speaking to an audience of the visually impaired. Reality becomes self-evident. I am very obviously not blonde. You can tell people that you believe in love and equity and justice, but if they see you breaking into the office safe with a crowbar, they get the idea you may be fibbing a little. Nobody in your real life knows your theology or what you really believe. They know what you have said to them, and they know you by what you do. The theological complexities you deal with in the real world are direct. What do I personally believe? What do I believe in here? How am I called to live those beliefs? And how much should other people be able to see of my beliefs in my daily life? So how do I live it? How do I let you see it? So that you don't need to read the books I've read. You just need to see my life to be able to infer who I am, what I believe. But in the digital world, in the world of the avatars that Paul was talking about, it works a little differently. And what happens in cyberspace impacts us all because 87% of Americans are online. 87%. The 13% who are not are split between those who claim absolutely no interest. Mind you, this includes the Amish. Those who are not able to understand how it works, literally, who say, I just can't comprehend. This includes profoundly handicapped folks, the elderly, folks in nursing homes, and those who live in deep poverty. Those way at the bottom of the poverty scale who simply have no access whatsoever. So even if you're not online, there is a good chance that everybody around you is. Let me have a show of hands. Who in this room absolutely does not use the internet? Period. Okay? That's about the right statistic. That's about what you expect. So he's got to deal with all of us, whether he chooses to use it or not. Our personalities are impacted and our interactive strategies. So he may not be there, but he gets it secondhand. For the rest of you, you're right out there in the fray. Online, we're removed from physical cues like expressions and body language. All you've got is the avatar, the picture, the image, chosen or picked by the person, the mask. It's difficult to tell if somebody's telling the truth or being sarcastic. Most of us have taken to using an asterisk or some other thing and labeling things sarcasm so we don't hurt feelings. You may be on a different continent from the person you're talking to. You may be coming from different cultures. You may have no idea of who they are other than the mask they are handing you. And you have no way to see behind it. Online, you can create a mask that looks any way you like, and with a little care, you can maintain it forever. And more than that, you can engage in activities that you wouldn't in real life and wear no masks at all, not even those of maturity or civility or civilization. If you live here in Heartland, Wisconsin, or in the environment nearby, there's no way to say this, but we're not exactly a New York City tenderloin level of sophistication and wit if you want a wilder edge to your life. We're Midwestern calm. But online, you have immediate access to everything the world has to offer. From the wildest cities in Thailand to the clubs in New York, the minds that create them in the physical space have created digital spaces that echo them. Online, you could escalate an argument using words that would get you clobbered in real life. You can comment on a news article with fury. You can be a smart aleck. You can be hurtful. And on the flip side, you can create absolute perfection. Your life can be the greatest hits camera roll. You can show only moments of absolute wonder. Your life is a Pinterest craft success highlights roll. Make everybody else feel like absolute hell. Because you never fail, or at least you never let them see you fail. This adds a layer of theological complexity to life. Now you have to decide what you believe, how to live it, how much to show people about what you believe, and the big one, How do you believe your beliefs and values should be demonstrated in cyberspace? When you're online, how do you live your beliefs? How called are you to keep it close to your real life? Let me give you some slightly scary stats. According to a CNN report this year, teens now spend 9 hours a day on social media. That's in addition to school and sleep. 9 hours a day. The average adult spends 2 hours a day. So you think about that in terms of your own free time. How much of a chunk that is. For adults, according to writer Evan Asano, current total time spent on social media beats time spent eating, drinking, socializing, and grooming. So again, even if it's not you, it's the person next to you. Or the person you work with. In the real world, your behavior is controlled by your theological and moral and ethical constructs, and it is held in check by a combination of laws and rules and other people's reactions. Online, you can choose to be completely yourself and take all the masks away. You can engage only in behaviors and ways of speaking and being that you would do in physical space, or, wow, you can not do that. The anonymity of much of the internet makes it possible to create a cyber persona, a mask, and to carry out behaviors that you would never do in real life. The way you talk to people, the way you explore things, it's not real after all, right? But the effects of your behavior are very real. Dr. Douglas Gentile, who is a national expert on internet and game behavior, you may have noticed every kid sitting here knew at least some of the characters. Everyone seemed like they'd had some exposure. Dr. Gentile was interviewing a young man named Brett about the two worlds he inhabited, online and real space. And he asked which world Brett found more important. And Brett said this, "I decided that the progression of my game character was more meaningful than the progression of myself in real life. It's so much more quantifiable. It's so visible. It's more entertaining than real life. It's easier than real life." Each year, more and more of us spend more time online, and people under 35 were born into a world where computers have always been there. And the boundaries between real and online are slowly being edged away. Whether you game or hang out on Facebook or Tumblr or just surf, the questions remain the same. Which world are you spending your time in, actually or just mentally? Are you thinking about what you're going to say? Are you thinking about the comment you're going to make on that article you read this morning before work? And how are you living your values in that world? And if your behavior and speech online doesn't match what you do in physical space, here's the big question. Which one is the mask? And why are you feeling the need to wear it? What face do you choose online? Is it a stranger to the values and theology that you claim to believe? Our first reading today gave you 10 tests for good digital citizenship. Does your online presence measure up? Which world's behaviors reflect who you really are? We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone is gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk. Some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we'd love to try them on.
What face are you wearing?
Amen.